The number one piece of advice I'd give you if you want to become successful and wealthy financially is to study what other people have done and then copy what they've done. Don't try and reinvent the wheel. See other people winning, especially if they're not a billionaire, but if they're like in the game a year or two and they started from scratch. Okay, well, what did they do? What did they do last year? What do I need to do? So last year I helped thousands of people become financially free in property. And I interviewed hundreds of people on my YouTube channel, and I've selected some of the top performing videos, the most interesting, relatable stories where you can model them and see what they've done, and you can do the same. And I've put them into a full video here. So take good notes, whatever you're doing, stop it. Get a pen and paper out right now, take good notes, and get ready to copy and paste your way to becoming financially free. Buying hotels at 21. I think this story deserves to make the newspaper.
End value of the two houses is basically £950 to £1 million.
My goodness. Yeah.
So now, instead of dreading my working day, I'm like, what shall I do today?
Which is financial freedom from one deal.
And I've learned very early on joining the academy and being in this property related environment that everything is about just belief. I know a couple of guys like Sook, he talks a lot about like limiting beliefs, and that is one of them. If you don't think you'll do it, it's never possible. But if you think about things that amazing people have done, it's not possible.
Yeah.
But they did it anyway.
Yeah.
You've just got to think outside the box and think, I can get there.
Yeah.
So it's a lot about pushing yourself and also knowing that in some way it is achievable.
To understand then, because that's a really important trick. People, number one, a lot of people say, I don't have anyone in my family that's got money. So think, actually, well, who do you know? Who do you know? Even if it's not in your family, in your networks, if you don't know anyone, join a network. Secondly, don't ask them for money. What did you say exactly? Because I know we work on this with how to find investors. How did you position it to him?
Well, I think what I said was I really respect your opinion, because obviously you're an experienced developer. You know what you're talking about.
Yes.
I'd appreciate if you look over this pack as like a first draft before I, you know, go and present it to investors and see what you think, see what I can change
that's
to make
genius,
it better.
Genius, bro.
Basically ask for his advice.
Yes.
And that's what he did, but I didn't even have to put the investor pitch out to other people.
Because if you just said to him, I've got a deal and I want some finance, can I meet you for a coffee and pitch it to you? He might have thought, oh, here we go. Whereas if you say, I've got a deal, I'm going to be raising finance for it, I really respect your opinion, I'd love to get some... Who's going to say no? Who's going to be like, no, I'm not going to spend 20 minutes giving... Of course, they're going to want to support you. So how do you know before you buy a property that Serco will definitely want it, or so, you can definitely get that rent?
First thing you do, before you even buy a property, look at a property, get the postcode. So we've seen a property wherever in Chorley. We get the postcode, ring up Serco straight away, give them the postcode, and they'll tell you over the phone. Within 5 minutes, they'll just say, yes, we do that area. You can ask them what the rate is, they'll tell you straight away. Once you get past that stage, if you buy the house, you can ring them back up and they'll arrange to come out and see you. So you'll walk them around and say, I'm going to turn this 3-bed to a 5-bed. You'll walk them around and say, this is going to be a bedroom. They'll talk you through that stage, and then they'll have a form with them, which is a letter of agreement.
Right.
So you'll get that form out, they'll sign it, we'll go through what you're going to do. So I'm going to turn it to a 5-bed, and then they'll put a date on it. So today's date, and they'll go, Paul, you have got this letter is set in stone for 6 months. So just save Serco, move out of that area after that time. So they do it. Sometimes they'll just move literally from one area and just stop doing any HMOs there. So if they do that with that letter, you can still get rid of it to Serco. So they sign that letter of agreement and you've got that set amount of time to do that HMO.
I mean, the networking is insane.
It's unbelievable. Honest to God, it's unbelievable.
And when you've got someone like yourself that's got a lot of experience, you're a builder, you've got a building company, and you're on the academy and you're giving value, you're helping
every
people.
But everyone then helps me as well.
It comes back, doesn't it?
100%. And the more you help, the more it seems to come back. And that's what I've learned. Like I said, 3 months in, I was like quiet on the academy, where after that 3 months, I was like, that's it. And I made like a promise to myself, I'm going to really go out and help as many people as I can.
I personally think all builders, and not just builders, letting agents, estate agents, I reckon they need to get in on the community and level up, scale up.
Definitely.
Because there's so much money left on the table. So many builders are just going out and they might be getting paid all right.
Mm.
They're making all right, they're making a living, but it's all active income.
Yeah.
But if they started joint venturing, buying properties, they
it's
could
so
just...
easy to get into. I mean, you don't need so much money to get started. And once you started, you're on that.
Yeah.
And once you get known in circle, they sort of know. So when they come and see me now, they're like, they know who we are and they know what standard of work we do. So it works a treat.
How does a Zimbabwean from nothing end up making millions of pounds setting her own law practice up? How does that happen?
I think it's about purpose. I think it's about passion. You saw me crying earlier. And even now, I got tearful when we're talking about property, when we're talking about homelessness, when we're talking about things like that. So property means a lot to me. Mm. It's not just about money. That is my pain. I was homeless how many times? As a family, how many times were we kicked out of properties? So because I've got that, it's a passion. I don't look at the profit. I think, how can I help you? Mm-hmm. How can I help you make a difference? Because I know what I went through.
Yeah.
So I think if you're coming from that position where you want to add value, it's different, isn't it?
So yeah, I think so. I think if you're passionate about what you do, you're then good at it. And if you're good at it, then people will pay you. People don't understand the importance of the detail of the legal side of things.
No, they don't, Samuel, because the devil is in the detail. And like you say, you know, the power of the paperwork, because people are making millions because of the paperwork. People are losing millions because of the paperwork. Mm. So you can create a legacy of liability or you can create a legacy of wealth, your choice. And that could be based on the power of the paperwork.
Yeah. I think success breeds success, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And when you have one or two good deals, people start coming to you and suddenly the world's your oyster and your first deal is always your hardest.
Yeah. Luckily, it's a good one for us. So, you know.
A very good one.
Yeah, yeah.
What advice would you give then in terms of, you talk a lot about mindset. Mm. How do you get the right mindset? If someone's feeling a bit negative, a bit skeptical, unsure of themselves, how do you get past that?
Yeah. Firstly, I want to say why it's important as well, because, you know, you come in the academy and you're doing a brilliant job of teaching people the skills and abilities, the framework of property development. And you're always about action. Ring the agents, do this.
Yeah,
do
forcing them to do it now.
Yeah, that really did help me, actually. And it helps a lot of people in this academy. But there's a whole bit underneath that I believe needs to be resolved. And it's NLP teaches us that it is, neuro-linguistic programming, which I'm a practitioner of. You need to firstly know what your life goal is, right? So for example, for me, mine is to help people, right? So anything I do in my life is to help people. So property investment, the reason I get into it is because I want to make more money to help more people, because I'll free my time up. And if I have more money, I can help people, right? And then, you know, you need to know your values of why it's important to you. And then your beliefs. So like you said, what is the one thing that's holding people back? A lot of people say limiting beliefs. For example, I'm not intelligent enough. I always make mistakes, scared of mistakes, scared of ringing the agent, scared of doing stuff because they know they're going to fail. Well, they don't know they're going to fail, but they believe they're going to fail. And that's been ingrained in them from some part in their life, you know? And it's quite sad to see, you know, because that was me. That was me. I was a very anxious person. You know, socially, Samuel, like honestly, people look at me and think, he's got everything together, even like a few years back. But inside, I was like, you know, suffering. It was tough. I'd say work on your mindset.
You can have all of the skills, but if you self-sabotage and just don't believe you can do it, you'll find the evidence to back up your belief. How did you find that transition? Because I speak to so many contractors or builders that desire to do their own projects. Mm. And I'll meet them and they'll be like 45 years old. Oh, I'm going to do my own project soon. And then I'll meet them 5 years later, they're 50. Oh, soon I'm going to... And they never do.
Yeah.
And they're just constantly trading their time for money. And fine, they might be getting paid well, but they're not building their own assets.
Mm.
So what advice would you give to a builder or someone that's got a construction company that wants to transition into doing their own projects? Because it is a different skill, isn't it?
100%. The thing is, it's so much more paperwork. You need to understand like the legislation behind things. You need to understand, you know, it's just so much paperwork.
You're an ex-barrister's clerk.
yeah. Well, yeah, I've always been pretty good on a computer. I think that's probably the issue with a lot of tradesmen is that a lot of those guys probably aren't very computer savvy. So it scares them.
Right.
Yeah. I think that the first step they need to do is they need to get educated. They need to put themselves, as we were just saying, in the right room around the right people, where those big steps now get broken down into a million small steps. Yeah. And it just makes it so much more achievable. Mm-hmm. And when you're speaking to people, you know, who are doing it already, they might be having problems that you never thought of, and they can tell you how to solve it or how they did it. For example, you meet, you know, there's loads of people who run construction businesses on the academy. Yeah,
environment is really important, because 100%. If you've got a flower and the flower's a house plant and it's not doing too well, you don't blame the plant. You just put it in the sunshine, you water it. And there's some people that I meet, especially that are just new to the, I've just met them, they're just new on the academy or whatever. And they say, oh, I'm really shy. It's like, you're probably life and soul of the party when you're in your own environment.
Yeah.
When you're in the right environment where it's a safe space and you can be yourself, when people are in the right environment and they think, actually, it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
And I can call it a landlord, I can call an investor, and if they don't buy the deal from me, it's okay.
Mm.
And when you're in that environment, you know, people can really thrive.
So what would you say, in terms of the mindset and the mentality, what guidance would you pass on to people? Maybe they're in the military or the forces, or maybe they're just in a really demanding job that takes a lot of energy. What kind of advice would you give them?
I would say always thinking of different means and ways of having a passive income in this modern day age, and always thinking ahead.
Yeah.
Using your income wisely, and always thinking of investing.
Yeah.
Because with investing, you try to create generational wealth as well, because no one knows what the future holds.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to somebody that's in a regular job, that's wanting to start from the ground up in property? What would you say is the best practical advice for them? Because you guys got started from scratch, you have no property experience prior, and now you're doing 55 grand in turnover a month, which is incredible. So what advice would you give to someone starting out?
I think if you know nothing, you know no one, and you've never even thought of it before, property specifically, you have to start by just becoming aware of what you're not sure of. I think that's the hardest thing, is sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
Mm.
And even when you get to a certain level and you hit certain beats in your story, you then go, okay, but now what? You still don't know what you don't know. So it's a continuous journey, right? It's relative. Yeah. So I think you just have to put yourself in environments and have those conversations with people that do know something. And it could be something so minute, it could just be about, you know, it could be their experience as a guest in an Airbnb, and it could be enough to just open your eyes to, oh, okay, well, that's quite, I'd like to have been the host on that, actually, because the way they've just spoken about this property, it gave me a bit of excitement.
Yeah.
It could just be any small nugget of just,
I agree. And also not being afraid to ask the stupid questions.
Yeah.
When you start out, you know, there's people that are afraid to ask a question because it seems too basic, but you got to ask those questions.
You have to be that guy.
The thing is, though, what would have been the merit, do you think, in continuing job? Because what I like to do is, like, if, let's say someone says, I want to be a doctor. Okay, cool. If you want to be a doctor, you've got to go uni, study medicine. Absolutely, that's fine. But look at someone 20 years ahead and ask yourself, do I want their life?
Yeah.
If you do, if you look at a 45-year-old doctor and you go, yeah, man, he's working 72 hours. He's making $4,000 a month. His back's bad. He never sees his kids. But you know what? That is what I wanted to get my life to. Then fine. Go to university, right? So with you, I would have said the same thing. If I was advising you at the time, I would have said, who's your boss? How long has he been in the business? Who's your boss's boss's boss? Right? Who are these? Okay. How much are they earning? What do they do? What does their life look like? And do you want that life? Did you do that?
I did, yeah. And a lot of people were telling me the same thing. And I was looking, you know, 20 years into the future. I was very young to be coming into the industry. And people were saying, you know, look at your MD, look at your managing director. You could be there in the next 10, 15 years. I mean, MD is
pretty high, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could be on 150 grand plus, you know, in the next 10 years. And, you know, at the time, to a 19-year-old, that's like, oh, wow, yeah, let's go for that. And then I sort of looked at a little bit more and, you know, works very long hours and it's always stressed out. It's just not to me the way I want my life.
When I was working as an estate agent, my boss said to me, look at our area manager, right? His name was Adrian, really good guy to be fair, but an absolute workhorse. But he was like the leader of the whole area of part of Birmingham that we're in. She's like, he's on 45 grand.
if you work your way up, you know, you could. And I remember thinking, 45 grand.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of money. Like, considering really. This guy is like on fire. He's big boss man. He walks in, everyone's scared. He's got all this stuff to manage. He's working nonstop. 45 grand, with yeah. including his commission and basic. That doesn't sound very good.
Yeah.
And that's when I thought, man, this shit for me. Talk me through the process of selling deals. How do you find investors?
Find investors basically from the academy, and also using LinkedIn, and then also using Instagram. They're my main sources of getting investors.
Generally with investors, before you start selling, you need to build your list, you need to build relationships, network with people. What are you saying to people? If you're at an event or an academy dinner or chatting with someone on social media or whatever, what are you actually saying to them to get them hot, ready to buy on your list?
Basically, I'd start with speaking to them first on a personal level. So just speak to them and see what they're doing and everything like that, rather than go and jump in. I've got deals all over. Do you want to buy this? I think it's better building a relationship with them first, and then obviously seeing what they're looking for, and then say, if I was to bring up a deal next week, would it be worth me bringing it to you, or would you be able to move on it?
That was if would close right there.
Mate,
but that's nice. Yeah, that's absolutely perfect. So if I was to find a deal, would it be worth me bringing it? You know, what are you saying? And if they're saying, oh, wow, I'm not sure, blah, blah, then you think, well, if they can't even commit to having a conversation if I've got a deal,
yeah,
then they're not ready. How does the average person then that's working in a regular job or they've got a business, haven't got loads of money? Did you have a lot of big money to start with?
I did do, but I went in hard on training because I can remember you saying, oh yeah, go and get a load of mentors. So I went rich dad, poor dad, 10x. But then it was just too many people. I was like, you had all the American slang, so to speak, and then we had you. So then I ended up shutting them down and just coming solely with you because it was information overload.
Yeah.
Like seriously information overload.
I mean, I think when I say read a lot of books, listen to lots of different mentors, I guess from a personal development perspective, like Grant Cardone, Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm just reading Fake at the moment. I don't know if you read that one.
No.
It's absolutely brilliant. Jim Rohn, he's passed away now, but his stuff, I think that is incredible. But from a nitty gritty, how do I actually find deals? What do? You kind of need someone.
Training? You need training?
Yeah, that's doing it in your country.
I tried doing it from the YouTube videos. Literally, I was like, oh, I'll be able to do it. I've heard of people when I went to £1 courses and they've managed to do it. It's like, it's very possible. But then I got the training and then it was like, the mentors was good. That was my, literally, I used to have a mentor call in the morning. Literally, this was when nothing was going on and it used to literally inspire me for the day and literally crack on it. It was unbelievable, to be fair. Like, literally, just get the training.
Would you have been able to build up your business, do you think, alongside your job? Or would it have happened but just been very slow? Or would you have done it?
My mindset is that I could have done it, but it would have been way too slow. Because even if I think of, I got my first unit that was in Liverpool. Again, it was kind of like your situation where the landlord was like, I'm going tomorrow. Do you want to come? And it was like a Thursday. And I was just like, yeah, I'm coming. So, and if I hadn't have gone, once he even got to Liverpool, there was someone else who was pitching him a rent to rent. But because we had come from London together all the way in the car, we were able to talk, build rapport, that even when another rent to rent person came and viewed the property, me and the landlord were already locked in, that he was just like, yeah, you can take it, Nicole. But had I been at work, that wouldn't have happened.
You're the kind of person that someone would get pitched from three different people, but they'd choose you.
Yes, that's it. God's grace. But yeah.
So what is that? What is that? Is it confidence? Is it building rapport? Is it sales skills? Oh. Is it God smiling on you? Of course we know it's that.
Yeah, God smiling on you.
Of course we know it's that. Of course we know it's that. But I'm just thinking, like, how can people kind of have a bit of that? Because there's other people that are the opposite. They're literally, they're no magnets.
Yeah.
I think it might apply due to expectations. If you expect, the landlord won't want to do business with me, whereas I think your mentality is, of course you'll do business with me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when you expect it and you,
yeah.
and also I remember you speaking, I think it was you that said on one of the masterminds, totally being yourself.
Yeah.
And not trying to put on a professional mask.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
So I've been listening to, in this time as well, not having to go to work, I've been reading so many personal development books. And I think the beauty is the belief comes before the behavior. So if you believe that you can, you can. If you believe that you can't, you can't. So for me, I'm always just like, yeah, this is going to happen. Like, this booking is going to come through. This, like, I'm going to take on this 4-bed and I know it's going to get booked and it's going to be a very good booking. That's always my belief. So when I speak to a landlord, I'm offering something great and I am a great person to work with. So it's not that it's more for you if you don't do it, but it's just like, if you don't want to do it, there's others. But I believe that my offering is great enough. And I just have the confidence to articulate that, that.
And people will buy into you and believe in you when you believe in yourself.
Exactly.
And going back to my question about the goal. So yes, you love being in the environment, the people, the atmosphere, the community, but what was the goal for you? Did you have one? Or
yes, definitely. So my goal, when you started the academy, so joined the academy, so it was like, you know, they always ask you to do your business plan.
Yeah,
business
and it's very hard to put together a business plan for you.
Exactly.
Because most people, it's like, when if someone says, well, I've got cancer, I don't know how long I've got left to live. It's like, how do we start? That's why I'm curious about what the plan for you was.
Exactly. So I think first thing is straight away, even after having like mental calls and chats, even in, you know, at the course itself, I booked so many mentors that I was like, okay, I need to talk to all of them. So I was talking to all of them and I was like, okay, my first goal is to leave my job. Yes. I want more time with my kids. I want to be free. I want to have time with the family. So I never actually considered to do the rent to essays myself because I obviously because of the construction company. I want to do flips. I want to do BRRs.
What you've done previously.
Yes,
the London House.
Exactly.
But that's slow.
Yeah.
And if you want to leave your job quick, if you start buying land like you're doing now, buying land, building houses, all that kind of stuff, that will take a year before you see a penny.
Exactly.
And you needed freedom.
Yes, exactly. So I want to do the BRs, but the mentor's like, well, if you want to leave your job, if that's your goal for now, you know, so you need the fast pound. So what about rent to essays? I was like, well, I never considered rent to essays. Obviously, I didn't know much about rent to essays. I knew about the BRs, which is great, but not obviously as much as well, but just had an idea. So they're like, okay, so first let's make a plan. Let's do, you know, like 6 months plan, for, you know, running a rent to essay so you can get that cash flow coming. You can resign your job. And then you can focus later on some BRRs.
What are the things when you're selling a rent-to-rent deal? Do you sell rent-to-rent deals?
Yes, we do, yeah.
What are the things that you check? Who's responsible for the due diligence? Is it you or is it the person buying the deal?
It's us initially. We bring all the information together. We'll create a full pack.
Yeah.
And once we give it to the investor, they have the 14 days time period basically to do their own due diligence, because you can't just go off what I say. At the end of the day, most of the investors that we work with, quite seasoned, you know, most of them are from the academy, they're trained, they're educated. So it's up to them to do their own due diligence as well and back it up.
So basically you present them your due diligence in good faith. Exactly. And the contract says has to be in good faith, i.e. you can't try and lie about the figures. So you're going to bring it to them in good faith. You're going to do all the checks. You're going to work out what you think they'll be able to make. But then the investor, they pay you the fee. Now they've got 2 weeks to do their own checks.
Exactly.
And then if they do their own checks and they go, I'm not comfortable, then there's a 2 week grace period.
Yes,
sir. If after 2 weeks, they then go, actually, I changed my mind, then it's kind of, well, sauce.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
You've had 2 weeks. Do you think sometimes like anger and frustration and depression even and sadness and disappointment to the core of the bitter being within you, you can, if you channel that, you can almost use that as your superpower to push forward and to use that anger, use that frustration, use that energy, rather than to beat yourself up. And some people use that energy to hurt other people. In fact, some people are frustrated that their life's not worked. So they'll use that to tell other people that their dreams can't work too.
Yeah.
They'll troll people online with anonymous accounts because Mark Zuckerberg does not make you use your verified ID, when what they should be doing is saying, actually, let me use all that anger and frustration and sadness and disappointment. Let me use that to go make another call.
Yeah.
That's what you
do. Exactly. Even while we were sat in the car, while the mood was horrible and, you know, the vibes in the car was, you could cut the tension with a knife.
Mm.
Just went through, I was like, let me give them a call. There and then, gave them a call. Call me back in 10 minutes. And all of a sudden, the whole vibe just changed.
Talk me through the business model of rent to rent. And because it shocks me that more people aren't doing it. Because you only need 1, 2, or 3 decent little rent to rents. And if you've got the skills to be able to find them and to be able to negotiate it, very little money. You know, a couple of grand, maybe in your case, £1,500. And then you've got a property that you don't own, but it's cash flowing a grand a month. Is that profit?
Yeah. No, that's after all the bills. Like the rent is really, really, we did negotiate the rent really low. And luckily we've got sort of very low outgoings and stuff like that. It's only a one bedroom flat.
Why would the landlord choose to rent to you instead of rent, especially when you're getting 10% discount, you got a month rent free period, no deposit. Why would the landlord choose to rent to you as opposed to just, I mean, the letting market is booming at the moment. It's not difficult to rent a property out. Why would they pass it to you?
Well, many, many different situations, mainly just through sort of peace of mind that the rent's going to get paid every single month through guaranteed rent.
Right.
With our situation, the big thing for him was that the house was in quite poor condition and the quality wasn't really there for the area. So we said, look, this is what we do. This is how we stage the properties. This is the facilities that we can bring. And then once he sees some of the pictures and stuff like that of what we can do, he was sort of happy to reduce the rent. He was happy to do a grace period and stuff like that because he knew longevity-wise it was going to work for him as a landlord.
I think what I struggled with is I'm more of a practical learner. So getting all this theory dumped on me, etc., I was just kind of like, okay, but I want to actually go out and do it. You know, I'm not doing anything here. And I didn't feel as if that I was actually progressing in my sort of business knowledge and also just progressing in life. Like I felt that like I'd done my A-levels, I did really well, but there was a next step that I thought university was going to take me and it didn't.
Did you finish it?
Didn't take
me
there. Graduate? No. So I finished my first year, got offered a degree apprenticeship at Amazon. So something a lot more practical. So then dropped out of my first year to do that instead and then continued with that for a little while as well. But I think what kind of got me into property and again, more being more entrepreneurial was I was a bit like I'm 21 now. I was older then, so I was about 17, 18. So I could see that financial pressure happening to my parents. And then I was like, I never, ever, ever want to go through this with my family in the future. So then I was like, okay, what can I do? And then I ended up going to a £1 crash course. And you know, you always ask, what's your why? And for me, my why was to help my family, help my mum out, get her out of her job, you know.
Push make me cry.
Push, like.
I mean, this whole money journey that I was speaking about earlier, that's definitely kind of been, like a journey, like work in progress for years. So I was saying to my husband, like, I want to make the money work for us rather than ask for the money. You know, we're doing something wrong. We both have a master's degree. We are highly educated. We're working our socks off just to get by, right?
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Like, it's like, if we can't make it, if we can't get beyond that, then who can?
It's the rent to rent, obviously, the strategy. And I went on to social housing. So I now house people for the emergency housing. There is in the database about 33,000 just in one of the boroughs in London of people that needs to be housing. And obviously, I come into place where I provide everything from what we do with the serviced accommodation. The houses are all furnished, all ready for them to go and live there. Mm. At the beginning, once they are in there, it's called emergency accommodation. Then it goes into temporary and it can go from 10 months plus to 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I managed to become the provider with the council.
That's huge.
That is like, I wouldn't have been able to do it without the knowledge. Like, it's impossible. You know, after you've done the social housing course on the academy, I was like, I was straight on it.
Yeah.
In like 2 days, I finished everything.
Wow. You went through the whole training program in two days. That's incredible. But the thing is, in property, it's always about finding, rather what a lot of people do is they'll swim against the tide. So if the government are making it very difficult to do buy to let, a lot of landlords will protest and complain and they'll be doing the old school way. Why not swim with where the tide is going? And social housing, I mean, the government are giving billions.
They have 11 billions on their budget.
Is it?
For the emergency. They actually have different budgets for different things.
Mm.
So I know for a fact that the budget for the emergency, it's actually higher than there would be for the LHA rate. You know, the local housing allowance, it's actually below than what they have for the emergency. So for me, when the council approach you, obviously they want to give you the LHA rate. But you have to make sure when you approach them, don't let them guide you guide them.
What is wrong with you people? You guys jumped on a plane. I know it's not a long plane journey and it's quite short, but still, it shows something about your character and the fact that your business people prepared to do what it takes.
Definitely, yeah. I think that's what separates people that have been successful, not having the commitment to just go for it.
Most people watching this YouTube video right now, probably less than 1% would actually, even though my program is £1 for a full day, less than 1% will actually go, you know what, I'm going to go to that.
Yeah, definitely.
And the other 99% will just be like, oh, I hope I'll one day get rich. No, you've got to actually take action, and otherwise something's going to happen.
I think a lot of people, whereas, you know, there's a lot of successful people you met inside the academy and obviously hard work. And I feel like even taking flights, because obviously we had to fly over, pay for the flights, the hotels and stuff like that. And at the start of our journey, we weren't even making any money. We were losing quite a lot of money as well. And still to have the drive to fly over, no, this is going to work. We're going to do it. We're getting, you know, we're getting taught everything and by the mentor and stuff. So
you're living in Jersey, which is middle of nowhere, is for all intents and purposes. Not for you, it's not, because it's where your house is and your family. But you know, it's a little island, and it's a plane journey to get to England. Full time jobs. How on earth did you manage to grow a rent to rent business and a property management business, doing $100,000 a month revenue from Jersey in full-time jobs? That's what we need to know.
Yes. I mean, like Harry was saying before, it's kind of been a bit of a blessing in disguise because we've had no other choice. So there's been a few things. I think the first thing is the academy has been a massive help because we're not in the areas we've got the properties in. So if we've had an issue, we need some way to resolve that. And by meeting people, making connections, helping people, giving people advice, we've managed to build a good network of people that if we need a favor, we can call upon it. One name I can give a shout out to, for example, is Jamie in Manchester. There's been a few times where we've had issues with lockboxes taken off walls and cleaners not turning up, or viewings need to be done for guests. And, you know, he's been willing to just give us a hand. So I think the academy has been a massive help. I think secondly is making sure you've got really good cleaners, maintenance. And then on top of that, we've just systemized, put a lot more systems in the back end, AI to do all our guest messaging.
Oh, now we're going to talk about that.
So there's a lot of different elements, but I think the main thing is, which is really important, your network is so, so important. Mm. So, you know, getting around the community like the academy is massively beneficial. Having cleaners that you can trust, because we've gone through a lot of cleaning companies, we've had a lot of issues. So we now sort of know which cleaners to work with. We also know what to look out for.
There's no such thing as a good deal or a bad deal, a good area, a bad area for investment. It's about being a good entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And really, you've just got to make your area work. And if you navigate through the area, work out the rules, work out the market research, the demands, you can make it work. Pretty much any area, you can make it work. You've just got to stop looking for the unicorn deal and stop looking for the magic goldmine area and make your own goldmine area. I think that's probably what you've done in Luton. You've found your area. You've worked out who's staying. You've done the demand. You've got a lot of experience in there yourself from as an estate agent and everything like that. You've trained, and then you've got this property and turned it into this absolutely outstanding, unique, interesting, and it's just worked.
And
it's great. It's really inspiring.
When you're deal sourcing, I would say it's a bit tricky. You've got to make it's a lot of numbers game a lot of time. You're phoning up landlords, you're having to convince them. A bit like when I do my valuations, you're going into landlords, speaking to face-to-face, and you're convincing them to go with you over your competition. With sourcing deals, I would say it's a little bit more trickier, numbers game, speaking to landlords, you know, explain the benefits to why renting the property to a company would be of benefit to them.
I guess in my mind, what I was sort of thinking is, I guess the estate agent's client is the seller.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're a deal sourcer, your client is the buyer.
That's true, yeah.
So people will sometimes say, why do I need a deal sourcer when I can just go straight to an estate agent or straight to even a letting agent and get my own deals? It's like, no, because if you go to an estate agent, they're trying to get the highest price possible for the seller. Whereas if you go to a deal sourcer, their loyalties are to you. They're trying to get the lowest price possible for you.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So you want someone to, you know,
represent you. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
What would you say about fast pound and slow pound? So your background is you've been an estate agent. You've also done some flipping, which is very profitable. How many deals have you flipped? Have you done up and sold?
So I flipped 10 in total.
Wow.
It includes one build as well, a big sort of four-bed detached house, which that's we built great. In Luton. Some of them are large scale, some of them are small scale. But it was a really good strategy for any estate agent who's out there now working. I think you should be actively looking to try and buy at the same time, because when you first start out as an estate agent, the pay isn't as it isn't massive.
Yeah.
So you've got to look at other ways of trying to generate a second income. And you obviously, you know, you're in the industry.
Yeah.
You've got access to properties, to knowledge of knowing what house prices are worth on particular roads. You can come across some sellers who are looking for a quicker sale. So for me, flipping was kind of always been my bread and butter and something that I really enjoyed. I've got a great power team behind me, which really helped lift the property value. And yeah, something I'll definitely continue to do. Yeah. But it's been an excellent strategy for, well, you know, we buy a property for X amount, we'd actually do it all up, move in for a short period of time, and then literally buy something else. And it's such a great strategy. I think it's kind of underrated.
I went to Leicester and said, show me what you're saying to the tenants. So I came out and she was like, okay, this is room number one. This is room number two. And she just took me around every room, all seven rooms. And I said, you can't do that because for a start, if you show all seven rooms, the tenant's thinking, well, what's wrong with these rooms?
Yeah.
I said, lock six doors, show one and do a block viewing.
Yeah. And I show two.
All right, that's fair enough. Yeah. Do you want this one or this one?
Exactly.
Yeah, alternative clothes.
Yeah.
But not seven.
No.
Not there's this. And if you're doing a block viewing and you've just got one or two rooms, suddenly now, fear of missing out.
Yeah.
FOMO.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's all right, bang, bang, bang. So there is an art to renting out rooms, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's an art
to it.
And you've obviously cracked that.
I learned from the best.
So. Well, what can I say? I mean, I learned the hard way.
I literally take you word for word. You know, you're verbatim. I just do what you tell me to do.
I also knew, obviously, at the time, I was like, it's not really enough to get a property. So that's why I was like, let me focus on that, build up my cash flow, my knowledge, you know, obviously do a bit of deal selling a little bit as well.
Have you sold deals as well then?
Yeah.
How often do you sell? How many do you tend to sell a month?
Now I sort of sell about, you know, two deals a month. But I was sort of, at the beginning of this year,
So you're selling a couple of deals a month? Which might be what? How much are you selling a deal for?
3,000. And then if I'm co-sourcing, then half that.
Yeah. So you're doing a bit of deal selling, making $3,000 or $6,000 a month on that.
Yeah.
Then you're making about $5,000 or $6,000 on your
rent to rents.
On your passing.
Yes.
Then you've got your rent to rents did about $6,000-$7,000. From a cash flow perspective now, I mean, people will probably trade places. Even doctors and lawyers and brain surgeons and rocket science. Yeah. And how old are you?
26.
26 years old. Do you ever pinch yourself and just think, man, I've got three businesses all in property, all related to each other.
Yeah.
All each making $6,000 approximately in profit. I mean, do you ever pinch yourself?
Yeah, I really do. I think it's only recently that I've suddenly been like wow, like I'm proud of myself. I always knew I could do it. I think I'm very much like, what's the next thing? Like I see, you know, big things. So I'm also like, it seems like a small step. But then when I look to where I started, I'm like, wow, this is it's amazing.
What do you think? Do you think your sales background helped a lot?
Yeah, I would say so.
I would say so too.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I see a lot of people that are really skilled, maybe salespeople, for example, but they're not making that much money.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, if you were in this industry.
Yeah, honestly. You
know, if you were in this, or there might be great marketers or great deal makers or deal stackers or whatever. But I'm like, yeah, but you're stacking deals for parts of cars or you're selling things that aren't that expensive. You're selling small products. But if you were selling property deals.
That's what made me realize in my job, because I knew I was so good at it and they were gutted, obviously, that I left. Like, I knew I was really good and I just thought, if I was doing that in actually something that was really making me money.
When did you realize that property was going to make you rich? When were you like, oh my gosh, I'm actually going to get rich?
I think the B&B was the one. I think as soon as the money started coming in from that, it was like...
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, shit, this is life-changing now. This is like, most people work their ass off all month for that. And I'm just like sat back here and the money's coming in.
Yeah.
If I just replicate that and do a few more of them.
What's your portfolio worth today?
2.3 million.
Nice. And then you've got all the other stuff that you're doing.
Got a few properties going through at the moment. Got another B&B going through. Got another lease option going through.
How does one determine their patch and their gold mine area? You found your little gold mine area and you've got your thing going.
Mm-hmm.
Should everybody go to Grimsby?
No, I don't think so. Again, it's completely up to them, but I think that it's got to be relatively close to you. So I can get to Grimsby in just under 2 hours.
Where do you live?
Leicester.
Yeah.
There are cheaper places nearer, but I found the first house there. I've got my contacts there. I've got you know, agents, builders. I've got a power team there now. So a lot of it is to do with who you meet and and your team you build up while you're there.
Sure.
But I know the area so well there now because I did the first BRR there and I pretty much lived there for 4 months doing work on it myself. I got to know the area really well. I got to know contacts there. So
yeah,
built up a really good team.
So how does one find their area?
As close as possible to you as you can. Now, yeah. If that's within an hour, great. You need to do your research on it. So you need to research to make sure that, you know, there's demand there. It's sort of everything's supply and demand. So you don't want to buy a house in an area and no one wants to live there or there's no demand for SAs or HMOs. It's specific to each and every person. So as near as possible to you and then what your strategy is. Does it work there? You know, if there's Article 4 there, can you do HMOs?
Yeah. Basically, there's no magic area.
There's no magic
area. You need to figure out your strategy, your goals.
Yeah.
And an area that you know that's relatively close to your home and it's very, very bespoke to you.
Exactly.
I think the best way to help people just in general, especially kids, is being a role model.
Exactly.
And even my kid, my little boy, when I was overweight, he asked me one day, he said, why have you got such a big belly?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what can I say to him?
Yeah.
You know, oh, because I eat too much.
Yeah.
Then I'm saying it's fine. But now he copies me. He wants to box. He wants to train.
Yeah.
He sees me recovering in my hot tub swim spa after workout. Oh, can I come in? Nah, mate, you got to work out first.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get this without that. Okay. Yeah. And then he'll go and go do stuff, you know.
Yeah, and making it enjoyable.
Now I'll be telling him, eat your vegetables. It makes you strong.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wants to be strong. He wants to be like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And he sees me taking my health and fitness seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that that's probably a big, and it's the same with finance. If you're complaining about money, and saying to your kids stuff like, well, money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they're going to grow up with a warped view around money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's making it enjoyable. It's making them know the benefits of exercise and eating healthier. And it's also not getting across that you don't have to eat 100% of the time healthy. That's also not what I want to advocate because that's never going to last. And your childhood should be enjoyable. You should be able to have treats and things like that. So it's cool. I always try and advocate an 80-20 balance. Like 80% of the time, eat healthy, exercise. And this applies to adults as well.
Mm.
But then 20% of the time, enjoy yourself.
If someone's listening to this and they're not happy with themselves, I talk mostly on this channel about finance and we're going to get to what you've done in property. But like, they're not happy with themselves in the way that they look, their confidence, they're overweight. And they think, I'm inspired by people like you, Zach. What are some of the steps that you can take? When I used to feel that way and I was like, oh man, I'm fat, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
You kind of, I'm an all or nothing person. Is that the way to go about it? Or is it?
No, you don't have to be. I'm very much like that as well. And I think people who have achieved a certain level that like we have, you have to be that sort of way inclined. I think because for me, when I was peaking CrossFit, I was training 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. And you've got to be selfish because there's times where my family like, do you want to come out for a meal? And I'm like, no, because I've got to eat this certain food and then I've got to train the next day.
Yeah.
So to get to that sort of level, you've got to be kind of obsessed.
Yeah.
Because you want to achieve your goal so badly and it takes a lot of time and a lot of sacrifices. But you don't have to go that all in. The hardest thing is starting. That's always the hardest thing is just getting into the gym, finding an exercise class, finding a routine and just starting that journey. And I've always got a saying when I sort of telling people to get into fitness is run your own race. And I think that's really important, especially in today's age with social media. It is so easy to compare yourself to other people. So you could start a fitness journey and you could see someone else on Instagram start the fitness journey and they're achieving their goals a lot quicker than you are. That can really demotivate people and sort of derail them and it'd be enough to stop them on that journey. But everyone's so individual. Everyone will achieve their goals at different rates. That's why it's so important to not judge yourself on anyone other's success. But I get a lot of people come into my CrossFit gym and they'll come in and they'll see all the sexy CrossFit moves, the ring muscle-ups, the handstand walks, snatching decent amount of weight. And they come in and they say, oh, I've seen you on Instagram. I want to do some ring muscle-ups. And they'll try it for 2 weeks and then they stop coming.
You don't know what the freehold restrictions are.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? You could see a property and you could see an apartment and you could, okay, that would work well for serviced accommodation. And then you could speak to me and then I could say, oh man, I really want to do it, but I've got a restriction with my freeholder. How often does that happen? What sort of percentages? Because I know not all apartments have got restrictions on serviced accommodation, but some do. So what kind of percentage from your experience would you say, does that become a deal breaker?
from what we've realized, we've had, I think we've viewed at least 10 to 12, and I think about 5 to 6 of them have restrictions.
Okay, so about half.
At least have restrictions.
That's annoying.
It is annoying because if they didn't have the restrictions, they were all perfectly good deals as well. The landlord was interested. He was happy to go for it, but because of the restrictions, but we still keep in contact with them. And now what they do, they check their, they're having to look at their mortgage. They're trying to see if they can change it and switch it into a holiday let, but it's just a longer process for them.
You know, it's interesting because some people say to me like, oh, it doesn't, service accommodation doesn't work because there's too many restrictions on the, on flats for with the head lease. And it's like, well, yeah, maybe 50% of London flats do have restriction, but 50% don't. Yeah, so rather than just, 50% don't, well, what about the ones that do? You'll throw seeds and some will land on the rocky ground and some will land on the fertile ground. And that's kind of part and parcel, isn't it?
Well, we keep a good relationship with all our clients that we work with. And that's another thing. So if somebody wants to speak to, because we've taken on people's properties and they want to speak to other people's properties we've taken on, and we pass on the numbers and they've always given us a good review because
they know
we put in the work. We don't treat them just like a random customer who we're listing their property. We treat their property with respect and we stage their property how we would stage ours. We make sure it's on the top standard.
Can anybody be successful?
I think
it's it all just narrows down.
Yeah, anyone can be successful if they try.
Yeah.
Like, you fail on the way. Failure is only the way you succeed even more. But so when a lot of people fail, they stop.
Right.
And that's how they don't become successful. Like, there's been loads of things that we failed at. It's been a massive learning curve for us. But
so many.
Yeah, but we didn't stop. And we have now gone up and up and up and up. And we can see that within the profit margins each month.
Yeah, it's like we finally broke through the ice. We fell in the lake. Now we're stuck under the ice. Fuck. We're in the lake again. Now we need a break for the ice.
I think that anybody can be successful, but definitely not everybody will.
Yeah.
Because some people don't want it bad enough. You've got to want it. Because if you don't want it bad enough, then when it gets tough, you just, forget this.
There's got to be some fire.
There has to be some fire. You have to want it. And I also think you have to be prepared to persist because, you know yourself, there's problems, things fall through, deals don't work out, disappointments. And you have to be prepared to do what most people aren't prepared to do to get the results that most people will never get.
Yeah.
There's always going to be challenges. And one thing that Rich always rolls his eyes at is that you always say, Samuel, is that you choose your hard. Mm. You choose which path you go down, you choose your hard. And Rich sits there rolling his eyes at me, goes, oh, for goodness sake. But it's true. No part of any journey is going to be easy. If you think you're just going to get a manual and that manual is going to do the work for you and then blame, oh, it doesn't work. The strategies don't work. The systems don't work. Mm. Well, that's your own fault. You clearly haven't given it a good go. You clearly haven't prioritised every evening we've been on the phone. Every evening those children go to bed and we hit the office. That is just what life has been like.
And that's why I make people make the calls on the training because then it's like you see the reality. You get rejected, but I'm there and I'm like, okay, good. Yeah. So what did you learn? All right, next. Whereas if you're at home on your own, I'm going to implement what I learned at the training last week. Oh, it doesn't work. You got to do it there and then. But no, I'm super excited. What would you say the biggest lessons have been then over the last year of building your business?
You don't have to work harder. Just work smarter.
Yeah.
That's a real big one for us. And you never know who you're talking to.
Yeah,
we could go meet, like I say, a landlord, and you think you're looking at one flat, and you might be looking at 20. You just don't know.
Yeah,
you just don't know.
I've had situations where the guy in the corner cleaning, I thought was the cleaner, actually doesn't own the property; he owns the whole building.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn.
And he came and met me, and he just liked my vibe. I was walking around the property. I was like, well, why did you do this? Why is that all magnolia? I was like teasing him a bit.
Yeah.
And just showing him my personality.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, do you mind if I do a video? And I was walking around doing a video. And I was like, oh, there he is. You know, I was just kind of making a light joke, a light fun of, is that viewing?
And he probably bought into you a bit. He's like, I like this lady. We can do business. Yeah.
And because I know that there's somebody else that tried to go for that property on a rent-to-rent basis who offered more as well.
Oh, and he said no to them and yes to you.
And yes to me.
So what's the lesson in that?
Authenticity.
Yeah.
Being yourself.
Yeah.
I like to have fun.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's one of my strap lines is have fun.
Is it?
Yeah. No, it's one of my mottos.
Is it?
Yeah. I say it to all my staff. I'm just like, have fun.
Have fun.
Like, oh, I've got any tips for me about have fun.
Yeah.
You know, you're about to go on stage and speak, aren't you?
I am.
Do you know what my advice to you is going to be? Have fun. Yeah, have fun. Just have fun. If you're enjoying yourself,
you're so much more successful.
Right.
I think that when you're all too serious, do you know people that have phone voice? So they'll call analysts, they're like, oh, hello, I'm calling. It's like, just have fun. Just have fun. Don't need to be super professional or anything. Me doing Winners on Wednesday, I just love doing it. I have fun.
Right.
You know?